password.
Whiskey.
Welcome to the Whiskey Underground.
Welcome everyone to the BSEA Whiskey Underground. We're here in our secret speakeasy to relax and enjoy one of the finest man-made creations on earth, whiskey. A little bit about the show. This show was created to enjoy, taste, learn, and educate us and yourselves about bourbon, scotch, different types of whiskey. Doesn't matter if you came here to drink it, if you came here to learn about it. We're here to just sit back and enjoy a glass of whiskey with you guys. So joining me on our show is my co-host, Brant Burke.
What's happening, Scott?
Brant, let's tell the audience a little bit about ourselves. So start with you.
Yeah. So I guess me personally can't remember exactly when I started to enjoy bourbon, but I think some of the earliest times that I kind of took it in and thought that it was something that was unique was just scotch. Scotch was my introduction, probably right out of college. Probably had some friends drinking it or just saw it in a movie and was like, man, that guy's cool. I'm going to check it out. So scotch and cigars kind of led me down the path of the brown water for sure. And I mean, since then I've been hooked. And probably more within the last 5 years or so, kind of turned on to bourbon and then got full-fledged addicted to bourbon for sure. But what about yourself? When did you start finding a passion and love for whiskey?
So I can't really remember exactly when, but it was sometime. It was after law school. A little bit of backstory about myself. My name is Scott Farney. I am a lawyer. I live in New Jersey. I also host a podcast called Three Sheets to the Mouse, where we talk about a little bit about Disney and drinking with five other guys. I really got started in whiskey when I had graduated law school. I came back to New Jersey and, I'd had various sorts of whiskey over the course of law school. You know, one of my best friends is from Kentucky, so he introduced me to a number of whiskeys and I was like okay with it. I preferred other spirits, beer and wine. And it wasn't until my father-in-law gave me a bottle of Dalmore that he had received as a Christmas gift, and he does not drink whiskey at all. So I was like, okay, let's check this out. And as I drank that and as I got to enjoy the flavors of it, that just spiraled downhill fast. So for about the last 7 years, it's just been a whirlwind of trying new things, learning new flavors, new styles. It's really been an education from start to finish. And the beauty of it is you never stop learning about new whiskeys, new flavors, finding new flavors in whiskey that you drink.
I was gonna say, yeah, discovering is always the fun part for me.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I guess, to go more in depth, I know you said, so I actually am a liquor sales rep, so I'm around it all day. That kind of definitely fueled the passion here the last few years. But like Scott, I'm also part of another podcast called Whistling Disney with my wife, and we do a couples podcast. I don't know if you actually said the name of the podcast that you host, but Scott and I kind of met through Disney, which kind of brings us into where we kind of started with this idea. I started a Facebook group for some of our, I guess, Disney nerds that I met through this group that started posting more bourbon, more whiskey, and kind of were teaching me a lot of things and a lot of new discoveries happening. So I kind of made it a little side page called the BC, and it's BSEA, and it's Bourbon Society of Enthusiasts and Addicts. And then I want to definitely push that when we say addicts in the name of the group, it's not in a negative way.
Not as
addicted, but in more of an addict. Like I say, myself, an addict of the chase, trying to find those bottles and find those rare things. Addicted to
the craft.
For me, it's to the craft. Yeah,
it's really an addiction to the craft. It's an addiction to the spirit behind the spirits. The flavors that you taste, the way to learning more about the process of how whiskey's made, how bourbon's made, how scotch is made, barreled, finished. It's really an addiction to the craft of it. So
yeah, absolutely.
But there's also a little Disney tie-in, isn't there, Brant?
Yeah, always got to have a little Disney in everything, everything we do, everything I do. I'm a bourbon addict and a Disney addict, but it's not something that Disney pushes out into the forefront of parks or movies or anything, but they have a little society that is actually called SEA, and it's SEA. It's the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, and it's kind of like their little underground, I guess, clique of some of the people are well known, and we'll get into that as we go through episodes, but some of them are a little bit more underground. But they kind of have a tie into a lot of things in Disney that aren't sticking out and right in front of your face, and if you dig a little deeper, it's a pretty cool story. And I guess when I started to think about the group, and I start thinking about these guys and girls in this Society of Explorers and Adventurers, they just seem like they have to be whiskey drinkers, right?
Yeah,
all of these people have to enjoy, whiskey. Just their personalities, as you'll learn as we kind of go through this series, just seems to fit.
The society was a club. It was like an old fashioned club where you would you'd be a secret member of it, and only you would know the other members, and they would know you, and you'd have a secret club handshake. And. And that's what we really wanted to kind of find with this podcast, with this group, is we want to create a little secret society for those who enjoy whiskey, enjoy the craft, enjoy the flavors. So we set out to kind of have this podcast. We can taste a few whiskeys, let you know what we're tasting so that you can come taste them with us and drink with us. Because that's really the fun of it. It's not just listening to a podcast about whiskey and we're going to give you a history lesson. It's going to be pour yourself a glass, pop in your headphones, and enjoy the whiskey with us and take down your notes and see what you get and see how they differ from us, and go back over to the Facebook group and post your notes on it. Post your thoughts on that whiskey that we tasted, because whiskey is a personalization of you. I mean, Brant's going to get some flavors that I may not get, and I may get some flavors that Brant doesn't get.
Yep. No, absolutely. And it's, I guess I kind of always twist and tie things with Disney, but I always say Disney's something that's better enjoyed with friends. And
absolutely.
And tasting whiskey, tasting new whiskey especially, is something that's definitely, I think, better with friends. You can kind of feed off of each other, get different ideas, get kind of a feel for what other people are tasting, and then kind of open your palate up to those things. Oh yeah, maybe I do taste some herb. Maybe I do taste orange. Maybe I do taste oak or wood or, leather or walnut or whatever those flavors may be that you hadn't thought about before. But Scott, I did want to say it's going to be a monthly podcast, so you'll have plenty of time to do your research, grab the whiskeys. At the end of this episode, we're going to tell you what we're going to be drinking on the next episode, and we'll do that from month to month. That way, you can kind of be prepped if you want to pop on a set of headphones when you get kind of settled in at night, listen to us, drink and taste along with us. We want it to be interactive, and we want everybody to interact in the Facebook group as well, and kind of give us your thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key is a group. It's a group night at a bar. We want to have you in the Facebook group. We want to have you talk about what you're drinking with us while we drink on the podcast. So, without further ado, Brant.
Yeah, let's get started.
Let's drink some whiskey, man.
Yeah. So tonight's episode, you know, kind of being our pilot, just letting everybody know what we're doing. Scott and I just picked kind of two wild cards. So as you'll see, as we go through all these episodes, each one will kind of have a sort of a theme. They'll be related in some kind of way. Either the whiskeys will be related or the whiskeys will be related to some type of story we're telling that night. But tonight, just kind of a wild card. So I picked a bottle that you can find pretty easily. That's one that's kind of close to my heart and that works with my palate very well. Scott did the same. So I picked one that's becoming, man, kind of harder to find. It's like the new little Blanton's on the block almost, right?
This bourbon, and look, little back up just a little bit. Brent is definitely more of a bourbon guy, and I'm definitely more of a Scotch guy. Doesn't mean we don't like the other side. It's just that's what, like, my favorite whiskeys in my collection are all Scotches. But doesn't mean I don't like bourbon from time to time, or like on a Tuesday, because it's all good.
And starting as a Scotch guy, I definitely have a love for Scotch, but I'm a passion for bourbon, and even more so now. I'm kind of getting this crazy, which coming a new thing is American whiskey that's malted barley, and it's just kind of like marrying American whiskey making and Scotch, and it is. It's awesome. So
those are some of my favorites.
Yeah. Without further ado,
let's crack this open here.
Yeah, I picked. It is Henry McKenna 10-year, and I think this is just. I'm gonna pull myself a big old tall one here. I think this is just a fine bourbon.
Now wait, it's not. Did yours come with a screw top or a cork?
It's got a cork. You got a screw top on yours?
I got a screw top still. So they've upped their game a little bit.
Huh? Yeah, it's got a cork. It had the foil paper all the way around it with the little bottle and bond strip.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it kind of goes over the top of it, but yeah, it's a cork. And I mean, I picked this up. Mine was it doesn't have a bottle, but it has barreled on. I guess date on the bottle, but I just picked this up last week. So I mean, it's brand new. I have a barrel date of January 2nd, 08.
So yeah, mine is barreled on August 31st, 2007. Henry McKenna. It's a very affordable whiskey. It has kind of blown up in the market a little bit only because we don't have a problem talking about it because the secret's now out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, a couple things about just the bottle on the surface. I mean, obviously from reading the label, you can pretty much pick up all this, but it's a 10-year aged whiskey. It is 100 proof, and it's bottled in bond. I don't know if we have a bottled and bond episode. I can't really remember off the top of my head.
We don't. This is a great time to maybe tell the listeners what that actually means.
Yeah, so bottled and bond came from the Bottled and Bond Act that happened in 1897. And to really understand it, though, you actually have to kind of go back, in my opinion, to 1870, all right? So, 27 years earlier, when whiskey or bourbon was first put into a bottle. The reason is because before that, it wasn't really readily available on the market. There wasn't really a market to buy it. It was at your pub. It was at your local tavern where they bought it in a barrel and served it to you there on premise. 1870, retail whiskey comes to retail. It's put in a bottle and you can buy it as an individual. So what is that? What happens then? Everybody goes, oh, get rich. I'm going to make some moon dogs, whatever, some white dog or moonshine, age it, food color it, caramel, whatever, put it in a bottle, sell it as whiskey. And people started getting ripped off with bad juice. So 1870, that kind of started happening. 27 years later, the government basically steps in and says, hey, we're going to not only make money doing this because we're going to tax you on the whiskey, but we're also going to give you a tax break if you produce the whiskey as bottled and bond, and you got to follow these steps to do that. So four, I guess, major things to bottled and bond. First big thing, it had to be from one distillation season. And a distillation season is January to June or July to December. So there's two seasons of distillation throughout the year. So everything had to come from one distillation season. which means it couldn't be leftover mash, old corn in the warehouse. It had to be fresh, new corn from that season, or wheat or barley, whatever you're using in the mash bill. One distillery and one distiller. So no blends, no purchased whiskey, nothing like that. Also had to be 4 years old, aged in a federally bonded warehouse. This is kind of where it gets weird, because I'm not sure exactly, besides the fact that it couldn't be tampered with, it couldn't be altered once it was in its storing process. I don't know really what else the federally bonded part of this added to it.
What it means is that that from time to time a government official will come and check up on the whiskey to make sure that the barrels have not been swapped out, not been altered, not been changed from that section. So the barrels are kept in a certain section according to what distillation season. So before we get into a little bit of history about McKenna, let's take a drink here.
Yeah.
Mm. Man, that's really good.
Yeah, I mean, so you're drinking it neat as well, I'm assuming?
Yes. Look, we've always said it before. The best whiskey you drink is the whiskey you like to drink, how you like to drink it.
I agree.
There's no right or wrong way to drink whiskey. That being said, I prefer mine neat, maybe a splash of water to open it up a little bit, but that comes after trial and error, really. So for me, it's neat.
Yeah, I agree. And this one, like you said, it's bottled and bond. Another thing, had to be 100 proof, had to have on the label, you know, where it was distilled. And if it came from a different bottler, that had to be on the label too. But that wraps up the bottled and bond part. Pretty easy. There's not that many of them out there. Henry McKenna is definitely, Henry McKenna is actually, Scott, the oldest bottled in bond. And I mean oldest by, it's the only one that's 10 years old. So really? Every other bottled and bond whiskey on the market is younger than 10 years. So, yeah.
I have a couple of other bottled and bonds. I've had 1792 Colonel E.H. Taylor. I've had that, or I have that right now.
Yep. There's several other ones. I went through a bunch of different ones. I think the Old Fitzgerald's bottled and bond. There's a couple other ones actually from Heaven Hill Distillery, which is where McKenna's made. That's bottled and bond. But yeah, so it's 10 years old aged bottled and bond. It's the longest aged bottled and bond on the market. Because of that, I can tell you first, literally just took a couple sniffs and one taste. I definitely got oak, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you definitely get that new charred oak, which is what gives bourbon that really dark color, as opposed to young scotches where, you know, we'll talk a little bit about about scotch later on in the show. But you get that new oak. Spices, that sweet corn, cinnamon spice. That cinnamon aroma really drives.
So I think it's just kind of got that spicy kind of herbal. It's not necessarily floral, but more deeper, darker kind of herby. But the crazy thing is you know, whenever we were in classes and we were always describing, everyone uses oak, vanilla, you know, all these kind of very broad flavors, which this has. But to me, it's like if your bourbon doesn't have that flavor, something's missing. You typically expect a bourbon to have that kind of vanilla, that kind of oak, kind of caramel. I mean, those are the typical flavors of what you're shooting for in bourbon. You don't want your bourbon to taste, you know, to smell like peas or something off the wall, right? It's got to smell. It's got to have that kind
classic,
of traditional
classic notes.
Classic notes. And this one absolutely has that.
So we're drinking our whiskey neat, but we're also drinking them in Glencairn glasses. You know, Google Glencairn glass. It's a tulip shaped glass. It has like a bulb on at the bottom of it, and then it kind of closes out to a smaller nose. Or to a smaller top of the glass, and that kind of really allows the flavors to situate themselves inside the glass and open up as they go through the top of the glass and into your nose. And when you're nosing, the whiskey, you know, get your nose right in there, you know, put your nose in the glass and take a smell of it.
Yeah. And smell with your mouth open and closed.
Smell with your mouth open, closed. You'll get different flavors each time. And then really what you're looking for is just think back to things in your life that you remember. You'll get those smells. You'll smell the vanilla, like when you open up a vanilla extract bottle. You'll smell the cinnamon, that sweet corn. That bourbon sweet corn is something I always look forward to when I pour one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like, my palate just kind of likes the sweeter, softer, softer bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to taste more rye and open it up for that. But this one, I mean, it definitely has a little rye. Riding as well. It's got a little spice, and I think that's kind of like you're talking about some of that.
That's the,
maybe what you're feeling, some of the cinnamon, the spice, that kind of flavor, maybe coming from some of the rye in the build.
Yeah. So a bourbon is made of really three grains on a normal basis. That's corn, wheat, and rye, and generally that rye, the rye wheat really brings out those spicy notes. If you've ever had a piece of rye bread, it has that like starchy flavor to it, that really bold bite to it that white bread or wheat bread doesn't have.
Yeah, and this, I can definitely taste some of that in there, and it actually kind of hits me on the back, and it seems to be a lot longer finish. If you just kind of think about how long you can taste those spicy notes, they seem to me to linger as some of the longest flavors.
Yeah.
On my tongue, got like a long, long spice finish.
I'm starting to get a lot of caramel on the nose. As it opens up and as you smell it more, I smell that, like, it's not really salted caramel, but like that Werther's original butterscotch caramel.
So there's some more things about this particular bourbon. It's like I said, it's from Heaven Hill Distillery, which also makes Elijah Craig, Old Fitzgerald, Larceny, Parker's Heritage, Evan Williams, tons of other world-renowned great bourbons. This is definitely a award-winning bourbon, especially here as of late. It won double gold San Francisco World Spirit Competition for best single barrel, and also just whiskey. Won double gold for whiskey this year, 2018. But kind of crazy, as I'm doing research, not a ton about McKenna. You got to really dig to kind of find out who this guy was, what he did. But the one thing that struck me that was pretty interesting is he was an Irish immigrant who had a family recipe for Irish whiskey that he adapted to the grains he could find in Kentucky. And that's basically how this bourbon was born. But it was basically born on a recipe of an Irish whiskey.
Not so sure
I can taste that, because it doesn't have much barley to me, which would be the recipe, but maybe the distilling style is kind of what the old family recipe was.
And I can kind of get a little bit of that unmalted barley. That's where you get those like cereal notes, the oatmeal notes. So the mash bill for this one is 75% corn, 13% rye, and 12% barley. So you get a lot of that corn, and it really overpowers the barley, but it does not overpower the rye. You get the spice with the rye.
So that kind of makes sense, because there's no wheat. Wheat kind of is what lends itself to softness, and
real,
this one definitely has
real
more
soft,
of the spice.
Real soft, smooth whiskeys on wheat.
How much barley you said is in the mash bill?
Only 12%.
12%. So it's the lesser of...
the lesser of the three grains here.
Yeah. And then how much corn centric was it?
75. It's a heavy corn.
That's why. And that's why you can taste that sweetness.
That caramel.
That corn on the front end. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
man.
It's good. There's a little kind of honey as you taste it. When I taste whiskeys, when I drink them, hold them in your mouth for a little bit, move it around, get it all over your tongue. I get a lot of that liquid honey, that real rich honey.
See, I can tell you, like when you do that to me, it has a thicker, slower honey, molasses, like syrupy consistency, even kind of to the taste of the bourbon. Not that it's a thick, you're not gonna pour it slowly out of the glass or anything, but it just kind of has that mouth feel of being a little kind of molasses syrupy feel. And also, one thing I can tell you, it doesn't have, which is another thing I look for. To me, I have no citrus at all in this. It is just straightforward kind of sweet corn, a little bit of spice, and like you said, kind of that roundness of kind of honey syrup type taste. I think all around awesome. So you're up in the eastern northeast. I'm down in the Gulf South. What did you pay for a bottle off the shelf?
So off the shelf, this one I've seen at a number of places around here in New Jersey. It ranges anywhere from $26 to about $33, and that's the normal that I've seen it. I paid, I think, $30-$31 for it. So it's not an overly, it's not a steep price for a damn good whiskey.
No, it's priced perfectly. About the same price point where I'm at. I think I paid $29.99 for mm-hmm. it just last Friday. So I mean, you know, a week. So that's the going rate for it, which I think it hopefully it'll hold there, right? They won't get wind of how in demand this bourbon is.
Oh, I'm sure this is going to go up a few dollars. But I think it'll stay around the 35 range at tops. I don't think they'll get a bunch above that because, you know, the people that have found this, that have enjoyed this and have kind of kept this a secret for quite a while now, since the whiskey boom of, what, about 8-10 years ago?
Yeah.
If you price it too high, you're gonna lock out those people who are like, well, I used to get it for $31. I'm not gonna go pay $40 for it.
Yeah, they're gonna find a new $30 bourbon.
Yeah, they'll find something else, and someone else will come out with something. It's priced perfectly. It drinks just as good as something that's in the 60 range, like Wyoming whiskey.
Yeah, I think. I mean, there's a lot of competition in this price range, and this bourbon definitely stands out. You can see why it's an award-winning single barrel, for sure.
When you can go to the store and you can get things like Jack Daniel's Black Label.
For probably more than what you're paying,
close to what you're paying for this. Jim Beam.
Maker's Mark. Jim.
I mean, you're going to pay about that for a standard bottle of whiskey. Go pick up Henry McKenna. It is well worth the price.
I think it's definitely smaller batch, smaller produce, mm-hmm. way more attention to detail and quality on a bottle like that. And that's why I think, you know, someone that's drinking bourbon neat, like Scott said, doesn't matter how you drink it, but if you're a neat bourbon drinker or just maybe a splash of water, a cube of ice, it's definitely worth it to get a kind of a more boutique, as I would say, bourbon versus that Beam, Maker's Jack, which, look, they make amazing product. They wouldn't have been around and be as successful as they are.
Yeah.
But this stuff is great for $30.
Now, I've even had this with one of those big, like, the big ice molds, the big giant ice balls. And even then, you know, you pour it over the ice and it kind of cools it down, mellows out a little bit of the spice. So there is some spice to this. I'm not going to lie. It gets a little bit of a burn as you drink it. Put some ice in it, cools it down, it kind of mellows out that real, real rich spice. I'm going to add a drop of water here.
Actually, just added an ice cube when you said that. So
I'm going to add a drop of water in there.
Let it sit.
Let it sit.
See if it opens up and changes.
I definitely get a lot more of the vanilla. It brings that right to the forefront on the nose. Yeah, that sweet caramel, sweet vanilla.
Hey, I think the vanilla, it just slams it.
I know.
Right to the front with the little water in it.
And that's what water's going to do to it. It's going to take the oils, because water and oil obviously don't mix. It's going to take those oils from the barrel, the vanilla, the oak, the caramel, and it's going to push those right up to the top. Oh, man, that's so good. Definitely mellows it out. Add a drop of water. It is bottled at 50% alcohol, which is a requirement. So you add some water to bring it down. I probably brought that down about 46%. And that drinks like a scotch now. Real smooth.
Yeah, just one, and I put one cube, chilled it a little bit. It drinks so much easier. It definitely can start tasting kind of some caramel, vanilla, candy kind of flavoring on there, like you said, and it puts it right up front. It also, to me, softened, like you said, softened the spice, but also softened the length of kind of the finish of it. So it made it a little bit, it kind of tails off a little quicker. It doesn't kind of stick on the palate as long.
Oh yeah, I can definitely tell that. It's not nearly as long and as rich as it was, but still it has that nice...
Pushes everything up front.
Yeah.
Everything's kind of pushed up front.
Yeah. It's got that nice finish still, not nearly as long. Very good. All right, I'm going to set mine aside.
Yeah.
And we're going to go...
Let's switch to what you're... You bring it to the table.
So
tonight.
we're gonna switch to a scotch this time because I'm gonna bring my my favorites, one of my favorites to the table. The Macallan 12 Double Cask is what we're drinking here right now. For as long as I have been drinking scotch, to be fair, I'm only 36 years old. It's only been about 10 years since I really started drinking scotch. Macallan has always been one of my favorite whiskeys. It has been a classic sherried Highland single malt whiskey that if you ever buy a bottle of, no matter what you buy, you're never going to go wrong with it. It's a wonderful whiskey that has such great classic flavors of Scotland. And when I introduce people to Scotch, I usually start with something mellow and smooth like this before I take them over to Islay and Island and Campbelltown, because that's not where you want to bring a novice to.
Right. Now, so, Macallan was definitely the first bottle of whiskey of drinking whiskey I purchased outside of, you know, whatever I purchased in college or before. But just before you even taste it, and I mean, I know you're holding the bottle, when you just put this bottle in your hand, it just feels like it feels elegant. It just feels elegant. It fits in your hand. It's made to just, you know, to be poured. It's a sexy, sleek bottle.
It is.
Awesome label. It's got the little picture of Macallan House at the top, established in 1824. It's awesome.
Yeah, so a little bit about Macallan. It's on the banks of the River Spey in the Highland region of Scotland, just outside of Craigellachie. So if you're looking for where that is, that's on the north part of the country, on the north, near the North Sea, in this area, which affectionately is known as Highland, but it's really a Speyside whiskey. And Speyside is everything that's on this River Spey, which is one of the main rivers of that produces the water for whiskeys in Scotland. So they've been, like Brant said, they were established in 1824. That's when one Mr. Alexander Reed, who was a school teacher and a farmer, began renting this home, this Easter Elkies house, from Sir Lewis Grant. And so what he did was during the summer, he would sow the fields with barley. He would, harvest the barley and then sell that off to, you know, to various producers to make, you know, to make wheat and to make bread. And he kept a little bit at the end, and so he would start to distill the excess grains into whiskey. Now, oftentimes, this was originally, drunk straight from the still, so almost like a moonshine. And we're gonna pour a little bit here, or sold to travelers passing through the town.
So they typically drank Macallan at barrel strength.
At distillation strength, straight from the still.
Distillation strength.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah. So super.
So pretty
solid. Yeah.
Super high proof, and
pretty stout.
Something that you would not want to. You probably wouldn't want to try. Today, it would not have any of the flavors that whiskey has. In 1868, James Stewart took the lease and he rebuilt the plant. And he kept this ownership until 1892 when he sold Macallan to a Roderick Kemp, who was one of the giants in Scotch production in Victorian Britain. He previously owned Talisker. We'll talk about them at some point on the show. His ancestors remained in ownership until 1996. So they kept this distillery for 104 years in the family.
Wow.
Until it was taken over by Highland Distilleries, which is now called Edrington. This plant is one of the largest in the world. They actually own about a third of the Scotch market, their sales. So it's not a small time distillery.
Yeah, this is so McKenna is not one of our brands that I distribute, but Macallan is, and it very well could be the only Scotch brand, you know, we distribute. And we have Glenlivet, Glenfarclas, I mean, a hundred other Glenfiddich, but Macallan dominates.
Yes, it's for a reason. One, it's great whiskey. Two, great marketing.
And like I said, I probably started drinking Scotch because I saw somebody that was on TV or in a movie that was cool, and he probably had a glass of Macallan, and I was like, I gotta get that.
Yeah. So let's take a little nose on this.
Yeah. So while you were talking, I was taking a nose, and so obviously you could smell the barley forefront versus sweet corn. The barley definitely has more kind of, to me, more of an earthiness to it. One thing I would say that I smell out the gate that may sound like a negative, but I'll twist it and tell you why it's not. I smell old leather.
Yes.
Yes. But it is like the kind of leather you would have in a Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, this is a vintage Ferrari leather. It smells elegant. It smells relaxing.
Yeah.
And then this one actually does, to me, have a little citrus versus the bourbon.
Yeah, this one I get right off the nose. I get that butterscotch, that typical scotch flavors of butterscotch and toffee apples. I mean, like, you think of one of those, like, green toffee apples. It's all there. Vanilla custard. A little bit of orange, and I think that's the citrus you're getting, that candied orange.
I'll say a little candied orange, yep.
Yeah.
But but now that I'm smelling it back, I can smell, kind of apple, what you're talking about.
Mm. You swirl that around, and you get all that honey, wood notes, and then the raisins and the dried fruits, the figs from the sherry cask. So a little bit about the double cask. Normally, scotch is a distilled spirit that is aged in usually ex-bourbon casks that are brought over to Scotland after they've had bourbon in them. And then filled with scotch in order to give it those a mellower flavor than bourbon gets, because bourbon's really spicy usually. So this double cask, what they do is they take new brand new oak from America, and they ship it thousands of miles over to Jerez, Spain, and they fill it with sherry, which is a fortified wine liqueur. And that's where the oak casks are crafted and sherry seasoned before traveling over to Scotland, and the spirits are then put in these brand new American oak casks that are sherry seasoned, and they're going to sit there for 12 years, and they're going to flavor this whiskey.
So do you know, I don't really know if it's half and half its lifespan.
So what they do is they take these new American oak casks, and then on the distillery already, they have sherry seasoned European oak casks. So they take a European oak cask that's been sitting for 12 years and an American oak cask, and then dump them together and make a bourbon or make a whiskey out of that.
So they marry them with full length age in both barrels.
It's essentially a blend of two different barrels of whiskey, but because it's all grain from the same grain, barley, and it's all at the same distillery, Macallan, it's a single malt.
Ah, okay, gotcha. So yeah, I mean, this is kind of a newer product too. When you think about Macallan, right? This hasn't been on the market for a total long.
I think 2017 was the first bottling they did of it. So they've been planning. This is the brilliance of it. They've been planning this for essentially 12 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think that's the tough thing about when you get into aged spirits market, right? I mean, you gotta predict trends 12 years in advance. What people are going to want. And lots of changes happening in Macallan right now too, so you can see in the next few years they're going to have tons of new crazy products coming out, and I'm sure they're going to be just like on this, they're going to be trend setting. Macallan's always trend setting the market on what people want, you know. That's one thing I guess like a lot of good companies do, they tell their customers what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
Macallan's really I hate to say up and coming because they've been around for almost 200 years, but they've really grown this last 10 years. So much that one thing I want to talk about here about Macallan is this new distillery and visitor center they got opening up soon.
Mm.
We've posted videos on the Facebook group. It is by far one of the most beautiful buildings, beautiful architectures that I have ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's stunning.
It's like a James Bond lair. It's like an evil genius lair.
Exactly what it looks like. It looks like an evil lair. Yeah, looks like it's something that's hidden. And I guess the way they describe it is as you see it in the countryside, it's just kind of buried. It's just, you don't, unless you know it's there, it's not there. It's kind of like the secret lair. It's hidden in plain sight. Beautiful distillery. I didn't really dig into the specs of it, but I only can imagine it's setting them up for, you know, amazing growth and production here for the foreseeable future.
So right now Macallan has a 370 acre estate. They've designed this new visitor center, and to give you the scale of it, so what you see is you see these little rolling hills. That's the roof. They've actually planted grass and barley on the roof so it will look like the landscape around it. But the building is actually dug deep into the ground, so deep you could actually fit the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral from London inside the Macallan distillery now.
That's pretty impressive. So why do you think they went underground? Just for climate?
It's that typical Scotland climate, that moisture in the air, that really thick, humid air in the wintertime, even in the wintertime, that you get that really flavors the barrels. Because as you know, Scotland gets cold, and cold is actually bad for whiskey. It doesn't let the wood expand and soak up the spirit.
Absorb, yeah.
And so right. What they do is they dig deep underground and put these in caves where it's a normal temperature. It's essentially 55 degrees all year round, but you've got that moisture and that humidity that kind of keep the cask from shrinking and contracting. And it really allows these sherry casks, because that's predominantly what Macallan uses in their whiskey production, is sherry seasoned casks.
Right.
And it allows those flavors to draw out, which is why a young whiskey, a 12-year-old is still pretty young on the market when you think Macallan produces 18, 25, 30, 40, and 60-year-old whiskeys.
Yeah.
It's why you have such a deep, deep, dark color. And, I mean, like, you compare, if you're at home, you're drinking both of these, compare the two colors together side by side, and you actually get a darker color in the whiskey, or in the scotch, in the Macallan, than you do the bourbon, which is rare.
Yep. No, that Macallan, just a couple extra years in those barrels. Mm-hmm. Definitely makes a difference. And I mean, having that one that's, I guess, been previously used, like you said, the sherry finish is lending itself to a little bit of that as well. I love what's happening now with finished, you know, second use finishings on whiskey. It's kind of a whole new quest to kind of find that new flavor out there. You know, a whiskey that you've known so long. Like we kind of talked about earlier, American malt, the Stranahan's, that you've known the original flavor of it so long, and then you taste the sherry cask finish, and you can really understand what the difference cask finishing can do to a whiskey. So I think it's awesome that Macallan did something like this, doing double casks and kind of getting some flavors blended in versus the regular just sherry cask 12-year finish.
Yeah, and that's where you'll get the sherry not only gives it that nice color, but that's where you get those really like dried fruits, the raisins, the figs, a little bit of that, like not as much cherry as you get on bourbon, because the bourbon takes on a lot of cherry notes from the wood, from the charred wood. You get some really good dark fruit notes in this one, along with the citrus and honey.
I agree. So what do you think the reason to go and put it in European, which I guess they call, you know, their name is the Limousine Oak, mm-hmm. Oak cask, just adding another dimension? I mean, is it something special? You know, I know European oak for most spirits in Europe, that's the go-to, you know, the go-to wood, obviously for ease. You know, I know tons of distillers are using that. But what do you think that the game plan here was to we were making this great product, super successful. Why go European European oak and blend it?
The European oak is traditionally what wine barrels are made of, so it gives it that fruity flavor. For some reason, the English oak, the German and French oak, really give nice floral, nice fruity notes to things. Whereas like the American oak is a little more, almost like a, it almost gives, to me, American oak, especially with bourbon, when they char it, gives a really heavy cherry flavor to it.
So you think it's just more floral in the European, more lighter. I'm sure you know, there's a visible difference in it in the wood itself, but I guess that lends to having that more lighter or airy floral taste, or you said kind of more of fruity in the American oak. It's in the bourbon barrel. I think you can kind of taste it. This was a kind of good comparison to taste of bourbon next to a scotch,
right? And you know, and I think it's traditionally because European oak is traditionally used in Scotch and Ireland, Scottish and Irish whiskey. And what they do is they basically send their oak over to America, and they use bourbon in it now, and then bring it back over here and put the whiskey in there. But it brings out those really like floral, candied, orange, candied pear, those real floral spices. You know, both are very good. Both are really good, but it's not the same like vanilla, honey, cherry, ginger notes that you get from like bourbon.
Yeah. I mean, I think it almost, it's not as deep, dark, rich. It definitely has a lighter, and I feel like it's definitely more delicate, lighter taste, in the Macallan. And I mean, it may just be being malted barley as well. I don't know. Do you kind of feel that, or you feel?
Well, I definitely get a lot of vanilla comes from these new American oak, you know, Highland, especially Highland. You're going to get the fruits, the citrus, the pear, apple, toffee, butterscotch. This really brings out a lot of the vanilla in it. I like that a lot. And that's why you said it smells like that favorite leather jacket you have. My co-host on Three Sheets to the Mouse, Tim, he describes this as a hug from your favorite leather jacket.
Yeah.
That's a great...
First smell, I was just like, man, it's leather. Just,
I know. It's really good.
It smells like amazing leather.
And combine the two of them, yeah. Like, you smell the two of them together, and they're different. They're distinctly different, but very similar.
Distinct. I think you can taste, especially after having a little bit of water in that bourbon now, you smell the scotch and then smell the bourbon, and it that vanilla in the bourbon, and like you said, kind of more butterscotch toffee when you talk about the sweetness of the two of them.
Yeah.
Vanilla, corn, butterscotch toffee, it's super apparent when you smell them side by side.
Yeah, you can definitely tell the two have have like a cousin in common. This is like the perfect American and British marriage right here. Little bit in common, but a little bit different. We hope you enjoyed drinking these two whiskeys with us. Brent, what's your favorite of the two? What if you had to sit down and pick one that you're going to drink right now?
Look, I mean, I kind of get warm and fuzzy on Macallan. You know, I think, like I said, the brand does a great job of making amazing product, but also like you said, marketing, getting it in your face. Macallan was my first love. I was glad that you picked this scotch to taste tonight because I already had a bottle. Because it's a great one to have. It's a great one to have on your shelf in your collection. You know, it may not be an every night drinker because we didn't really talk about it, but the bottle is probably twice the price of what the McKenna, comes in.
Macallan 12 will generally run you anywhere from $50 to $55 a bottle. It is on the pricier side, but it is something I recommend to have in your collection to keep for the dram on a Saturday and then bottle it back up and put it back on the shelf and then switch over to something else. And that's actually a great idea. Switch over to McKenna after you're done with your Macallan, and you've really got a nice flavor profile that you've graduated to.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to talk about, like, you know, we talk about training your palate or expanding your palate. When you taste these two totally different things back to back, you're going to understand why a scotch is a scotch, malted barley, what that tastes like at the core. Even if you can't pick out all these floral taste and candy taste and, you know, all these other things, you're going to taste what malted barley tastes like and what 75% corn whiskey tastes like. You're going to taste that out the gate. I mean, I think anyone is going to be able to taste those huge differences in flavor. But Macallan on the shelf is always a good thing to have, because I think it kind of almost could become your base of what good scotch is. And as you get other scotches, you can kind of explore, okay, this is way smokier. Okay, this is less. This has got more tart, more fruit. You know, it's that Macallan 12 is just kind of like the perfect baseline scotch.
Absolutely. Sure.
What about you? Would you feel overall between the two of them?
Man, that's like choosing children, man. You know this. I like both of them a lot. I like the McKenna. It is a wonderful introduction to bourbon. If someone is afraid of too much heat with bourbon, too much spice, you know, you don't want to go to like Knob 120 right off the bat. McKenna is a great starting point for bourbon. It's a great everyday drinker that you could just sit down on a Wednesday night after work, put on some baseball. Like I said, McKenna is a good everyday drinker that you could just sit back and you know, relax and enjoy in front of the TV on a Tuesday or Wednesday. That being said, I gotta stick with my Macallan 12, my double cask. It's such a wonderful, wonderful scotch. I know Macallan does get that evil big corporate rap, even though they're kind of like family owned. They're not as big as some of the other Scotch distilleries.
Yeah, Macallan Edrington is actually owned. It's actually in a family trust.
Yeah,
And it is actually technically a non-profit, which is kind of under.
So. Yeah, they technically are non-profit. They do have a lot of charity that they give back to, which is amazing.
Tons of charity. And I think that's why they make an amazing product for the price as well. There's not a ton of suits chasing down dividends and returns on this thing. They're looking to make amazing product and keep it going for years and years to come.
And kind of a little more about Macallan is they actually grow their own grain on site. They have farmland where they grow their ministerial barley, this special strand of barley that they've created for their whiskey. They have a game master. They actually have a game master on premises who operates the fishing on the River Spey that people come from thousands of miles to do fishing on this river. They have Highland cattle. I mean, they have a real estate where whiskey is not just a spirit, but a spiritual right. That's why I call this the soul of Scotland. I mean, you talk about quintessentially Scottish. This is Scotland in a glass.
Yeah. It's definitely one to check out for sure. I wouldn't miss it. I mean, anything from Macallan's great, but this in particular is just a super well-rounded, fully flavored scotch. And it's pretty easy to drink. I would say, like you said, with the McKenna being an intro to bourbon, this is not a bad one to dive into.
No, not at all.
For scotch.
Not at all. It's a great intro to scotch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, as we finish up these glasses, I would say Macallan. Yes, the marketing's there. You'll see it in the James Bond movies. He drinks Macallan. They drink Macallan 50 at one point in Skyfall, which is just beyond measure of what I could imagine how that tastes.
Yeah, we had a little conversation in the group. I don't remember if it was in the three sheets or the bourbon group, the BC.
I think both, because we like to talk about whiskey in all of them.
In all of them. But we talked about Macallan 30, and I actually had it several years ago, and it was liquid gold. It was caramel in a glass. It was the easiest thing to consume. So smooth, so amazing. I could only imagine what 50 and 60 and 62 oh my God. And 65-year-old Macallan tastes like. And that's why these things go for, you know, $65,000 a bottle, brand new, first, you know, first sale retail. Yeah. Not to mention, some, you know, not to mention somebody's got it sitting on a shelf for another 10, 20, you know, 20 yeah. years, and it becomes a vintage bottle, you know.
Exactly. And that's the thing about Macallan is they do a great job, you know, because they have this family trust that is built up over the years. They can sit on whiskey for 60 years and bottle it 60 years later and not miss a beat because they've been doing this for over almost 200 years now.
Yep. I think Macallan holds the record for most expensive bottle of whiskey ever sold.
I think it was the 62 in a Lalique decanter sold for, $468,000 is the number that comes to mind.
Yeah, I know it was somewhere super up there, but it gets hard. Like you said, once you've got a 65-year-old bottle of whiskey and you open it, there's not too many left that are unopened. So they go for, like, it seems like every time one gets sold or is drank, the price just keeps going up and up and up, you know?
As we close here tonight, we want to, we basically want this, we want your time with us on the show, and we want your time in the group to be educational, enjoyable. So next month, we'll be back with another show next month. We'll have a guest. That said guest has no idea what's coming to them. They will receive a small package in the mail, specially marked. It will contain two vials of the whiskey that we have chosen. We will have a special guest with us to taste whiskey with us because, like Brant said, the best whiskey you enjoy is whiskey enjoyed with friends. And they will taste the whiskey. They'll give their notes. We'll give our notes. And we'll have a little discussion about the Society of Explorers and Adventurers, which our society takes its nod from. So next month, Brant, we're going to be talking about which two whiskeys.
Next month, we are going to have... So actually, go pick these up if you want to taste along with us, kind of get a head start. We're going to let you know. We're going to have a Buffalo Trace, just the regular Buffalo Trace whiskey, and also Woodford Reserve. So two bourbons from the heart of Kentucky, Buffalo Trace, the namesake of that famous distillery, and then Woodford Reserve. So also, as you heard at the beginning of this episode, there's going to be a new password. And next month's password is... Scott, we got a password next month.
Yeah, we're gonna do Derby because the Woodford Reserve is famous.
The official sponsor.
The official sponsor of the Kentucky Derby. And if we're tasting two bourbons, you can't get much bigger than the Derby itself. So also next month we're gonna be talking a little bit about one of our SEA members, the Society of Explorers and Adventurers. And who is that, Brant?
So next month it is Jason Chandler. He's going to be the first person we talk about. So if you want to kind of do some research, kind of understand what is going on with that, do so. But if not, sit back, get your whiskey ready, get your Buffalo Trace and Woodford ready, and we'll tell you all about Mr. Chandler and how he ties into the Society of Explorers and Adventurers and how he ties into these bourbons with the Bourbon Society of Enthusiasts and Addicts.
We want your time on the show, in the group, to be educational and enjoyable. The best thing you can do is learn. The best thing you can do is enjoy the whiskey that you've bought, taste it, learn about it, figure out why it's made, how it's made, what goes into it. That's really what the society is all about. We've come up with a little bit of a mission statement, a club motto. Maybe a cheers if you see us out in public, you know? A cheers. So at the end of your jam, grab your glass. If you came here to learn,
drink what you've learned.
If you came here to share,
share what you drink.
If you came here a stranger,
may you exit as a friend.
And if you came here for adventure,
drink up. Cheers, everybody. Have a good month.